Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Survivor Specialist John and McKenna are here to talk Survivor 44, Episode 7, but in the past. John, how are you doing today?
McKenna, I'm doing great. You know what? Despite this episode and like all of its contractors out there on the internet, I actually kind of enjoyed this episode. It was a weird one, especially for you and I to discuss, because it's kind of something we've never had before, but kind of also something we have had before. So it's going to be really fun to talk about today.
Yes. So we are going to be talking Merge Tribe names first, because we actually get this season a little snippet of camp life where they're like, what should we name the tribes? And I was excited that we actually got like something like that again. And it's been a while since we've gotten to, you know, see the discovery of the tribe names.
Yeah, actually, we haven't. In fact, the last couple seasons, it takes us a while till we find out what the tribe name is.
Yeah, it's just like the heading that pops up, like, blank tribe camp or whatever it is, where they're like coming to the beach, or like blank tribe John blank tribe.
Yeah, I think it's really nice having these scenes where we get to talk merge names, because I think it really shows a lot of the character of these contestants in the season, how they're cooperating with each other. You can tell by who leads the conversation, how they might be perceived and everything, or how invested people are in their tribe name. Because I do think like the merge tribe is the only tribe you get an option of naming. So I think it's really important to name it something that really represents you, because it's the one thing in the legacy of Survivor, other than your gameplay, that you get to leave a mark on the game. So having this conversation of, you know, it was what? Vava is what we're going with this season. Vava, which is 4-4. Specifically, not 44, but 4-4 in Fijian. But you know, it's nice. At least like we still kind of get that little bit of culture. One of the things we really complain about a lot in this like Fiji era of Survivor is we don't get to spend a lot of time with the Fijian culture, right? And it's kind of like removed from the show. But at least we see that the contestants respected enough to look up things in Fijian before coming out.
Yeah. So like, we get these last few seasons from like Millennials versus Gen X onward of, this is Fijian for blank. as their merge tribe name, which I wonder who's like, where I'm just waiting for, it's Fijian for, you know, strength or something, and it's something that they made up. So, like, some of other few contestants in the past have done it. So, like, Eric Reichenbach with Dabu.
Yeah, I mean, the confessional where Eric explains the fact that Dabu is just some made-up word, it's fun because the amount of conviction he has while he's convincing the rest of his tribe, this is what we should name our merge tribe name, it's so convincing. This man is able to go out here and just convince this group of people that, yes, no, I swear this word actually means something in the native language they speak here, but it actually means absolutely nothing.
Yeah, exactly. Then you have Merlonio in Redemption Island, which Boston Rob named the Merge Tribe, and it was Amber's childhood stuffed toy.
Yeah, I think that's why kind of one of those more iconic moments of a Merge Tribe kind of getting the most ridiculous name possible. Sometimes the Merge Tribe names are more ridiculous when they don't have something they're being named after like that, but it was humorous because it was a secret between Boston, Rob, and Amber, and then the audience, because we get it in that confessional where Rob explains it. And I kind of like that. I like that little aspect of naming the tribes like that. I like that personality of it.
We also see that in Karamoan with Malcolm and Anil Adam. And it's this long, like, drawn-out name that I feel like is not needed. And then he's just like, yeah, it's my mom's name backwards.
Which, I mean, honestly, might be the most hilarious of them all.
I love that. Like, he was like, yeah, I was able to scoot in my mom's name as the merge tribe. Crazy.
Yeah, and it's that moment of conviction, right? It's that moment of how you deliver. I think it really shows a lot of, like, Survivor gameplay, the way that you can present this to people. Because it takes a lot to throw out something like that and have it so that the other contestants don't call you out on it.
Right, exactly.
Right? And it's like, even in this episode last night where we have Jam Jam explaining that Va is four in Fijian, if anyone else knew Fijian and that wasn't true, like if anyone else thought of looking up four in Fijian and that wasn't true, you just call them out on it right there. And that's also a hilarious scene. And I look forward to that eventually happening where someone can call them out on it. But it's just, if you have the conviction and the strength in your ideas to fully convince 10, 12 other people that they should name the tribe something, and it's something goofy, like your mother's name backwards, all the power to you.
I mean, then we have Worlds Apart with you have the no collar, blue collar, white collar. That's all like America in a bottle, right? No, it's America in a bottle.
It is. And the official name for America doesn't have the apostrophe, correct?
Yeah, it's just America.
It's just America.
And it's not like America, like what had been trending. It's America.
But, you know, I get it. I wonder if they just tried to name it America, and the producers are like, you can't do that. It's an interesting, it's probably, honestly, the most wild tribe name we've ever had. And it so encapsulates that season, too, though.
Yeah.
Like, it is everything that is Worlds Apart. It's the America tribe name just brings that entire, like, the entire season's philosophy together so well.
Yeah, and then we go on to other seasons that kind of take the theme into consideration, you know, with this Worlds Apart. We have, like, Heroes versus Villains with Yin Yang, China with Hai Daifeng, Hao Daifeng? Yes,
Hai Daifeng, yeah.
And Black Fighting Winds. They're, like, using their season to name their tribes, which is fun in itself.
Yeah, and I mean, China even went one further, right? China went, oh, hey, our merge buff is black, so we're black. We have to say black in our tribes, right? Like, we gotta go for it.
Yeah. And then the last one I want to touch on is where they just smash their names together, like Itutanga, where it's Rarotonga and Itutaki smashed together. There we go. That's our merge tribe.
Yeah, I mean, the portmanteau is kind of like, it's been used in most Survivor seasons when it comes down to naming merge tribes. A lot of it is just like, it's a combination of these different merges that we've seen throughout them. It's obviously the least creative. It doesn't really give us that identity of the cast as much, but sometimes the words they come up with are absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, exactly. Well, speaking of Cook Islands and Itutanga, we are going to be watching an episode of Cook Islands for the Patreon this week. We are watching Plan Voodoo. It is not a merge, but it is a double tribal council where the group is split, that you can watch the other tribal council. There's a twist at tribal council. So we are watching Plan Voodoo from Cook Islands, and I am so excited. So tune in tomorrow over on the Patreon, and you can watch along with us.
Yeah, McKenna, finally. I got Gabon last week, so McKenna gets Cook Islands this week. That was the agreement we made.
Yes.
Conveniently, it fit really well with this episode because it's this merge episode that is kind of a pre-merge episode, and it's really weird.
Because we're still in tribe, because we haven't had a solid vote together. Like, it's just like weird, because it's the merge but not the merge. Anyway, so we're gonna be watching Cook Islands, but we're gonna go to the challenge now, and this is one of my favorite challenges. I am so excited for this challenge. It's called Audio Slave, or Overextended, or 10-foot pole. So we first see the version of this in Samoa between Russell and Brett, and that's when they're adding a length of pole underneath and they're looking up at the totem. This is my least favorite version of it, but it's still like the wind can play a factor. Is it shaking? Can you correct it? I just think this is a fun challenge.
This is an interesting challenge. It's really interesting when we look at the evolution of this challenge over the years, because we're 15 seasons past. Nope, that's not how math works. We are 25 seasons past Samoa at this point, and we've seen three different iterations of this challenge. And yes, the Samoa one, I think the Samoa one variation is still the most iconic variation of it, where in Samoa, it was every 2 minutes they had to add another length to their pole, and it got up there, and, you know, idols falling off and stuff like that. And then we also saw it again in South Pacific. It was one of the duels. It was the first duel in South Pacific between Christine and Semar. Yeah. And then I think, like, the most iconic one that everyone really remembers, though, is the one in Cambodia where Joe and Keith are going for an hour and 20 minutes, which is significantly longer than the 14 minutes this challenge first took. Granted, they have, I'm fairly certain they're not putting a new length onto this pole at every 2 minutes in Cambodia. Yeah. But that was the challenge where Joe faints and Keith wins immunity because of that. And then we kind of get into this evolution of this challenge where instead of going vertical, we start going horizontal.
Yeah, so we go horizontal, and we start that in Millennials versus Gen X. And so they have a length of pole, say about 10 feet, with a idol balancing on a ledge. And they have to hold it up with this pole. And then instead of adding lengths up, they are walking backwards on a balance beam and have to, like, end in a certain color or what have you to mark their transition. And it's live transitions and all that. But this is an interesting one because you're dealing with the balance of your own strength, either pushing it over or having it fall backwards.
Yeah, this variation is actually arguably the hardest of them because, like you said, it's that balance of you have to apply enough pressure to it so that it doesn't fall backwards, but you can't apply too much so it falls forward. And you have to manage that, especially in these transitions, while you're moving back on your balance beam. And so you're paying attention to not only your own physical balance, which will shift the way that you are applying pressure to this totem, but you're also paying attention to this totem, and you want to be fixated on this totem. With these endurance challenges in Survivor, it's so important to remain concentrated and to have all your focus on the task at hand. And that's why this challenge is so hard, because it forces a split in your attention.
Yeah. So we also see it in, we see it in Millennials versus Gen X, then Heroes, Healers, Hustlers. And then we skip a little bit here and go to Winners at War with Tony winning it. And he, we go like kind of backwards in a version of this challenge when we get to Winners at War. So,
yeah, and of course, this is like the iconic one where Tony beats Jeremy. Tony actually was a challenge. It's a huge deal. But prior to this, the last couple of iterations we've seen of this challenge, and you know what, quite frankly, people watching this challenge might not even realize that this is kind of like a linked challenge. Because in Ghost Island, they changed it yet again from this variation we had in When I Was vs. Gen X. Yes, to Audio Slave, which is the one where you have to hold the boom pole over your head. So what we saw last night with a totem balancing on it, and again, still on a balance beam.
Yeah, this is my favorite version of it. I majored in editing and sound in college, so I have held many a boom pole, but the tricky thing with boom poles is you can't let it rest on your head because your hair actually does provide like audio feedback to the boom pole, so you're always having to like not let it rest, and so I feel like I could do rather well on this challenge because I can actually use my head and let it rest and, you know, take breaks with an arm. So I love this one. Kellen wins it. Then we see it again in EOE and Julie wins it. And then we go back actually to the one that was in Samoa for last season. And it kind of, that version kind of flows into this one where it's a ball on top. Now we're adding a different element to this challenge of, you know, movability, where it's not a sturdy totem. It's a ball kind of wobbling around on this platform.
I really like the evolution of adding a ball to this. I think it's a great twist on what has become a classic Survivor challenge at this point. I think it's especially important in like the overextended version of this challenge because balls falling on your head don't hurt as much as statues falling on your head. So it's a safety thing for sure. But also I just think like what happened is I think a lot of this also has to do with the fact that in the 26-day game, we don't have time for challenges to go very long because the production has to adhere to a schedule. So, for instance, like when we go back to David versus Goliath with that challenge that Christian and Alec did for long, right? They had to postpone tribal council that night because the challenge went so long. And in the new era of Survivor, they don't have that luxury as much. Mm-hmm. So I think adding the ball just is that little bit. It's such a small change, but it's a change that just makes it so much harder to focus, and because now you're not even focusing on just your movements, you're focusing on the movements of something else that you are not directly impacting.
Yeah, exactly. I would be most nervous for this one actually that we saw last night in Audio Slave because he, I don't know, just the ball makes me nervous. Like I could definitely do it with a totem with a totem, but adding the ball to it and having that like rolling around be a factor, man, that I give props to those people last night. That was tough.
Yeah, Franny did a fantastic job here, especially holding it out after the rest of her team is all gone. Mm-hmm. And having four other people on the other team still competing. The other interesting thing with this, they didn't make them move on about the balance beam at all, right? I'm not blanking here. That didn't happen last night, right? They were just standing on the balance beam.
They were just standing.
So that's another interesting evolution here where you add the ball, so maybe make it a little easier so you're not like progressing down the narrowing and narrowing balance beam. I think that's fine. I think this is production adapting a challenge quite well to make it not quite the same as what everyone's done. So it's not quite what they're expecting, but it still has the same like core principles to it. And we see like these people go for it, right? And like Franny got to beat an NFL player. It's an incredible accomplishment. And it's great to see it. I know there was a lot of discussion on the internet about, you know, Franny should have thrown it and stuff. I don't think that's true, because I think when you're a survivor, you just want to win these challenges because your own safety is more important than anything else in the game.
Exactly. So what happened before this challenge was Carson drew the wrong rock or the odd rock out. So he was forced to sit out of this challenge and not compete. But Jeff gives him this opportunity to back a quote-unquote tribe. And if they win, he wins. If they lose, he loses. And we have seen this a couple of times before last season. And then mainly Nicaragua is the one that sticks out the most in my mind.
Yeah, it's really funny because this division of tribes at a challenge in a merge point doesn't usually happen like this. It's not usually, okay, one of these groups is safe, one of them's not safe. We've seen it essentially once, which was Fiji, and right. we don't talk about Fiji going home that time. But this time around, like, we get this, and it's an odd number. The decision to do this at an odd number where we've gotten to a point in the new era in the last three seasons where 10 has been the double boot. Every single time we've been at 10 in the last three seasons. And to do this at 11, smart, throws the players off. They don't know what's going on. We get something different. Clutch hat trick here saying that they didn't hate the twist. I didn't hate the twist either. It's a little awkward when you just had like half the tribe not safe last week and you're giving half of them safe again. But I think at this point, we just kind of have to view it not as a merge, and we have to view it as a tribe swap because they ended up going to a different beach afterwards.
Yeah.
And then we have Carson, you know, picking a side.
Yeah. So Carson backed the orange tribe and they won. So he won immunity. In Nicaragua, we have the Gulliver's Travels sponsored challenge where Dan Lembo is sitting out and he gets to choose his tribe that he backs. And this is also the famous Purple Kelly and Nayanka episode.
What an episode to have. It's okay, guys. We're not making you watch that episode for the Patreon this week.
Yeah, I already kiboshed Nicaragua. So I'm sorry to those who love Nicaragua. It's got to be a perfect episode for me to rewatch it for this. And then that was the one that stuck out to John. But the one for me was where Chase was sitting out. And it's all the guys versus all of the girls. And Chase is just like, yeah, I'm going to back the women. And I think they're going to take it down. And everyone's just questioning his decision. Because they weren't the strongest of women. I think they're strong in their own right, so like individual-wise. But as a group, these guys were stronger than the women. So it was just really interesting to watch that dynamic of Chase picking the women and losing.
I mean, there are reasons why Chase picked the women. Chase was closer with the women at that point than he was with most of the guys. But also the interesting thing that makes Nicaragua so different than what we saw last night both of those instances in Nicaragua
were reward.
For reward.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And yes, there's a reward element to this, but Carson's decision is about immunity. So this isn't about just like choosing the right team so that you win. You also have to make a decision based on if you lose. And I think that's why what Carson did yesterday was brilliant, because Carson picks the tribe. If you look at like the way these teams divided, the team he picked had Franny. Wait, I wrote this down so I can write it and say it. It was Franny, Heidi, Kane, Danny, Carolyn, and himself. Right? So if they went to tribal, and we had just seen the scenes beforehand where they were discussing, okay, we have to take out Danny. Like, we have to blindside him while he thinks he's leading everything.
Yeah.
Carson going on that team gives them the numbers to do that in that instance. So I think Carson really played this twist incredibly well based on the knowledge that was given. He presented it in a way, it was a subtle move, but he positioned himself to be successful no matter the outcome of this challenge.
Yeah, and I also think his decision is so much more weighted than any other decision, because like Chase could have done it for just social standing with the women, mm-hmm. being like, oh yeah, I backed you guys because I thought you would win. Here, immunity is on the line. It's not just a reward that you're missing out on. It's safety, and that's your life in this game. Immunity, fire is your life.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, that's why the comparison with, like, Noelle last season is obviously a little more in line with this tonight. But I think, given what we were shown in this episode leading up to this choice, we understood Carson's choice a lot more without him having to directly explain it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now we get everybody who lost going to a different camp, and they are unprepared for this. Namely, Matt. He is unprepared for this venture to a different camp and doesn't have his stuff. He does not have any of his... he does not have his bag with his fake idol or his shot in the dark. And it's a struggle.
Yeah, I think a lot of the times we forget as viewers, especially like now, that the shot in the dark is actually a physical advantage you have to play. You have to take your die and put it in the thing so you can draw a scroll rather than rolling it for your 1 in 6 chance of being safe. But, you know, we've talked about that ad nauseum at this point on the podcast. But if we ever see a Survivor player going to a challenge without a bag now, they haven't watched this season. Like, we're at that point, right? And leaving things at camp in case of a merge or something like that, obviously, like, a lot of the time production tells you when something like this happens. This is a twist, so it wasn't a tribe swap, so they didn't get a heads up. Matt leaves his bag, doesn't have any of his advantages. It's kind of like, it's like that awkward scene in Heroes vs. Villains where the villains tribe pack up their entire camp because they think a merge is coming, and then they don't, like, get a merge.
Yeah.
In reverse.
Yeah, exactly. You just kind of always have to bring your stuff with you, I feel. Like, you never know when you're going to go to another beach. Like, we see it with Janu. We see it with, you know, Julia Sokolowski. Yes, those were like exile situations, but you just never know when showing up somewhere. So I feel like those who bury idols are risky. Those who keep them in their bag are risky. Like, idols are just risky to have in general, but you just bring your stuff with you. That is so bad. But the only kind of, like, comparisons we have, I think the main one would be Garrett with it leaving his idol at camp would be kind of the best comparison. The other ones are kind of jury management. But, so if you want to talk about Garrett and his idol.
Yeah, well, I always want to talk about Garrett Adelstein. Part of the reason why Kage on such a great season. But Garrett's downfall is his hubris here, right? Like, Garrett is a victim of his own cockiness, knowing, thinking that he knows what the plan is because he...
They talked about it all together in the shelter.
Yeah, exactly. And because of that, he felt overconfident, didn't bring his idol with him. Matt's not taking his bag to a challenge is obviously very different, but the problem is, like, we don't really have a comparable to this exact moment where, you know, a twist is just dropped on the contestants where they don't expect it to be to leave them without their things. And Jeff Probst did say in an interview today that had someone brought Matt's bag to Tribal Council, he would not have been able to get it. So just Matt leaving his bag because his reasoning of why would I need my bag at a challenge, totally reasonable reasoning, just completely like prevented him from having this aspect of like, the interesting thing is the fact that his Shot in the Dark was there, which made it so that he couldn't use the twist that they've like introduced in this new era specifically for these type of moments.
Yeah. So then we get things like, you know, it is, the twist is kind of like a blindside. So We get Rupert in Pearl Islands. He's blindsided at his vote. He doesn't bring his bags to Tribal Council and has to leave without all of his stuff that he's accumulated, clothing or like knickknacks, shells, what have you, because he left his bag at camp and has to leave Tribal Council. So Rupert also left his bag back at camp and was blindsided, but was just out of the game, realized he was out of the game sooner than Matt did. Matt just had impending doom.
Yeah, it was just Rupert was blindsided by the contestants rather than by production.
Right. Then you have two instances of hats, of Penner's hat and Julie's hat. They left it back at camp and kind of mentioned something about it, and so jury management got to get those hats back to those contestants.
I mean, if we look at it, like, the people who brought those hatbacks went on to win their their respective seasons. So having someone forget a hat, bringing it to them in the jury, very good jury management, apparently.
Yeah, and Yule did that in Cook Islands with Penner. So make sure you watch that episode of Cook Islands for the Patreon, Plan Voodoo.
I mean, that's not the episode that he brings the hat back, but no, still relevant.
But still, join our Patreon. And then the last thing I want to talk about is the Malcolm Booten Game Changers, where it's like not even like remotely the same kind of deal, but they're strategizing on separate camps. So there is a strategy element to the winning tribe because they have the vote, decide the other person's vote advantage. And so they're strategizing on that beach. And then you have everybody who's in the vote strategizing on their own beach and then come to Tribal Council together and are like, all right, we're going to discuss everything and then have this, you know, twist of I'm now going to tell you who to vote for.
Yeah, I mean, it's again, one of those situations where it's kind of similar to this, where it kind of lines up. Again, we don't really have a perfect comparable to this because It's essentially like, hey, you people are safe from the vote, but you're also, you know, your safety without power. As Jeff put it last night, which is an interesting rebranding of an advantage we already knew existed in the game. So interesting choice. That seems to be what they're doing now with that. I'm okay with that. Because again, I'm okay with this twist in a nutshell. It's like when we dissect and we get to the point where we realize that this is two tribals in a row where half the tribe is.
That's where I have the issue. If this was like the mergatory, great. Mm-hmm. They like safety without power and they can watch no vote. Like this whole thing happened in place of last vote. Mm-hmm. Totally chill with this. It's just like, it feels like, when are we merged?
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the question. Now, apparently it's when you have a merge buff. That's what everything seems to be pointing to now, is you have a merge buff, you're officially merged. And to be fair, like, despite the fact that we do have, you know, half the tribe sitting out at this tribal council, which we'll get into in a little bit. Like, they still have an opportunity to talk to these people, which when in the instances that we're going to talk about, when we talk about, you know, tribes sitting on other tribes' council or tribal councils, these are people who haven't really talked to each other before. And if they have, it's just because there was a swap beforehand. So it's really interesting because, like, it's a whole other level of strategy here where it's like you have to look at how these tribes have been broken down. Obviously, with this division we had last night, you had three Ratus. And it kind of, it was interesting because we weren't really sure where Jamie stood on it all until they were half so bad. Yeah, until they clearly stated she was Ratu. So it's interesting and everything. But, like, Matt and Jam Jam had opportunities to make connections with these people. The six people who weren't part of this vote had opportunities to talk with these people and strategize in case of a situation like this. I think what we're going to see in future seasons, we're going to see people preparing for instances like this, where it's like, okay, if we get split up, how do we manage this? Mm-hmm. And we have to figure out exactly who we are working with before anything like this can happen, which is tough in a 26-day game when it moves at a breakneck speeds.
Yeah, exactly. So we mentioned it a little bit. Heidi got this decide someone else's vote advantage. And had she been actually voting in this tribal council, it's basically a steal a vote. So we're going to talk steal a votes in Survivor here. And it's like our only best comparison because you are deciding someone's vote.
It's essentially the same thing, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, the only difference is you're also happen to be immune.
Yeah.
And don't have a vote yourself.
Right.
So, I almost like it more than... Okay. John's rant on steal on the vote steal here. I hate vote steal. I hate the vote steal because I find the one... And it's kind of the same reason why I kind of hate people losing their votes in the pre-merge and everything in the new era. The vote is like the one thing you always have in Survivor previously, not anymore. But previously, like, the vote is like that one thing you have. It doesn't matter how terrible your relationships are. Doesn't matter if someone has an idol. You have a vote and it can count for something. It is some bit of power you have in the game. And I hate it when people lose their votes because they're having that opportunity taken away from them. And we've seen the vote steal in the past. Like, it was introduced in Cambodia. And it's different. The difference between the vote steal and the control of vote is with the vote steal in Cambodia. Fishback steals Joe's vote, uses it to vote for Joe. Which, A, not a great plan. But still, it's fine. Yeah. It's not a great plan because you don't vote for the person you're stealing the vote from. Because then, in our case, a revote. There's no vote. It doesn't matter with the steal vote anyways, but still. But with a control of vote, there is no way Heidi could have taken someone's vote and used it against themselves.
Right. Like, because Lauren can't vote for Lauren. So
yeah.
He essentially has to, it has to be someone else. So you can't target someone else with the stolen vote. It's a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, little rules when it comes towards this. And it's kind of, like, the unclear things about the control of vote. The fact that, you know, Heidi had to mention it out loud changes the power of this, too, right? Because, like, in the end, the control of vote, yes, it takes away someone's vote, which sucks. It also gave power, essentially a collective power to the six who weren't voting. It gave them a vote, right? And Heidi overall has the power to leverage it. And, like, we've seen these type of votes leveraged differently in the past in Survivor. We saw Game Changers where Sarah,
that's a big one.
Right, where Sarah takes her steal a vote, gives it to Sari as just like this, I trust you gesture. And Sari goes to play it just to, like, have Sarah vote the way she needs to. And Sarah's like, I should have read the fine print. Says it's non-transferable. I'll take that. I'm going to seal a vote. We're voting out Michaela this time.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that is... That's, Like, that's crazy because with having this vote steal, it just provides a whole new dynamic where that's why I think this is so fascinating, because they're immune. They're not able to strategize. They're not getting any information but what they've had previously. And that was Jam was the other name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I know there's a lot of criticism on the internet right now about, oh, you know, Heidi messed things up. Heidi should have, because Heidi could say the name, right? She could have, like, taken Jamie's vote, put the vote on Lauren, and then in case of a tie, because, like, then you kind of force Lauren. You're essentially saying, like, if you put the vote on Lauren, you're telling Jam and Matt, okay, vote Lauren here. Lauren has to use her extra vote to force a tie, but then Lauren can't vote in the revote, and neither can whoever's being targeted. So, like, it doesn't matter because it's still a 2-1 against whoever that person is. Unless Heidi still controls Jamie's vote in a case of a revote. Again, not enough rules being explained. Rules are good. Rules help you play the game better. It's an interesting situation, but, like, we've seen steal of votes a lot in the new era. And, like, this is a different iteration of it that, like, it only works in this specific position
right.
in the game. And I'm okay with it, I think. We'll see how I feel about it in the future.
So we've also seen steal votes from 41 through 43 as well. But 41, Brad left with it. He got it on his mm-hmm. night adventure with Tiffany and Sydney. And then 42, it was the second tier of the amulet, which we blew right by it. And then we had Noelle stealing James's vote, or stealing Owen's vote to vote James in 43.
So, which is almost our, like, most comparable. It's also almost our most comparable situation, because that was at Final 10. That was in those split tribes last season.
Yeah, exactly. Which hated demerge, but and then we also saw at on Winners at War, Natalie found it, sold it to Sarah because she had used one correctly in the past.
Yeah, and I mean this is that really fun scene where Sarah and Tody, you know, Tody, like, spits in the ash and, like, starts rubbing it on Sarah's face, and Sarah has to go to the other tribe to get this steal of a. And she eventually uses it in the Tyson boot, where she steals Denise's vote in order to vote
Jeremy's safety without powers.
Yeah, weird. Lots of weird things from that tribal council translating over here in weird ways, but not quite the same way.
Right. Exactly. So, yeah, that's pretty much the extent of, like, steal a vote. But now we're going to talk about the whole sitting in on tribal council of it all. So typically this is in the tribal phase, which they're merged. So we're going to ignore that.
This is a tribe swap. There's no other way to look at this, but this is a tribe swap. They're merged in name and in buff, but this was a tribe swap.
So typically we have it in the tribal phase. And it's both tribes are going to tribal council. One gets to look at the winning tribe gets to look at the loser's tribal council, maybe with a feast, or someone gets to one representative gets to watch the tribal council of the losers and give out immunity. So there's kind of different iterations of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the ones that we tend to remember, though, are the ones that involve food.
Right.
I think those are, not only are, like, some of them, like, some of the more iconic episodes in Survivor history.
Or we have both in the case of Palau.
Yeah. That may not also happen. but I think, like, this feast and sitting in our tribal council is such a powerful advantage. Jeff talks about it all the time, and I mean we'll talk about it more tomorrow mm-hmm. on the Patreon, because we are covering episode 6 of Cook Islands, which is the episode where people eat lamb shanks at Tribal Council while they listen in.
Yes, it's the episode where we get a twist at Tribal Council, which is kind of like Heidi's twist of, you know, it does deal with a vote. Well, it does deal with a vote. Yep. Nate can no longer vote because he is stolen over to I2. And, you know, it's a fun episode of Survivor, and I got my little Cook Islands in. So I'm excited to watch that for the Patreon. But we also get this in Heroes versus Villains and Nicaragua.
Yeah, Nicaragua coming up a lot this week. Heroes versus Villains, of course, is the Tyson boot. Because these feasts happen at double boots, traditionally. Yeah. These are episodes where it's like, okay, we're not playing for a reward today, but we are. We're also playing for immunity. Your reward is you get to eat and you get to listen into the other tribal council. You get to go first, vote someone out, and then sit there and eat. Which, man, I have to say, being the person voted out on that tribal council of all of them has to be demoralizing. Yes, you get to eat in Ponderosa, but like you are literally leaving spelling that food.
But what if you like hate lamb shanks or hate beef stew or hate hot dogs? Like, what if it's something that you don't like? Like, for me, I hate peanut butter. I said it. So that reward for the merge would suck. I'm eating potato chips and iced tea. Like, yep. I don't know. So there could be an okay feeling about leaving.
I think when you're that hungry, it doesn't matter.
Listen, would I rather have something that production provided for me or my own choice of food? I'd go for my own choice of food because
sure. I guess people of Skylands weren't that hungry, so that's fine. Yeah. But we also have those instances where they go to a tribal and then they give up or they give immunity to someone and they save someone.
Vanuatu, yeah. John Kenny, he won individual for his tribe, stayed back, gave the well. No, he went to the beach, went to tribal council with them, and then gave immunity. Rafe did that in Guatemala as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So there's
the episode before the Gabon episode we talked about last week literally had a tribal council in which Marcus was able to give the individual immunity to, who did he give it to?
Sugar.
Yeah, he gave it to Sugar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's pretty much this episode in the past. I'm excited to watch Cook Islands with you all tomorrow, so tune into the Patreon.
Yeah, so make sure if you haven't already, subscribe to the Patreon. Subscribe at $1, you get the Discord, you get to talk to people. People are talking about these episodes, especially when we get a twist like we did last night. People like talking about it, analyzing it, everything like that. Today, we were talking about the fact that Matt and Franny are still supposedly dating. Tune in to the after shows the after episode recap with Phil and Alexa every week. $20 patrons, you also get Phil's after show every Thursday after the episodes. Tune in Monday at 8:45 Eastern when Phil and Alexa do their predictions and power rankings with Karishma. So that should be a very fun episode for everyone. Make sure you like and subscribe, and we'll see you again next week.
Goodbye, everyone. Join the Patreon. Watch Cook Islands.